The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra.
Oh dear. After homegrown punditry took a South American battering on Monday's pod, the same kind of thing materialised in the Champions League, with City and Arsenal taking a beating, doing some bleating, and ensuring their involvement will be fleeting. There'll be more Cut Price, Gilbert and Sullivan throughout the show, as well as analysis of the other two Champions League games. He's rubbish, isn't he? That's Zlatan. And a look ahead to the Premier League weekend, which at first glance probably won't be a thriller. That's all to come on Football Weekly Extra. Well, I won't be the first or last person to get into trouble because of a well-presented Brazilian, but I managed to survive Monday and I'm here for a final time before you know who returns next week. Barry made it too and is still trying to decipher one of Fernando's religious-based jokes. My bet is that he'll wake up laughing on Sunday morning at around 6 a.m. just before he goes to early mass. So we survived. James Horncastle wasn't so lucky. He was led kicking and screaming from his mansion in Belsize Park and was last seen wandering around the island of Capri muttering the word Careca over and over again. So he's been replaced by Ian Mackin, who'll bring us his version of light relief when he can be bothered to turn up. And we're also in the company of one of the few people to have interviewed both Sade and Felix Magath. It's that smooth operator, Raphael Honigstein. You like that, don't you? Big smile.
Perfect.
Now, firstly, have you finished your snack, your breakfast snack, Raphael?
No,
I haven't. It's been a bit off-putting, I have to say.
I haven't.
Barry, let's start with, firstly, your reaction to what happened on Monday. Are you sort of shaking but okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, not too bad.
I'm used to it. An interesting hour, though, wasn't it?
It was an interesting... Well, it was longer than that.
Felt longer than that.
Yeah. So several bits had to be left on the cutting room floor.
Yes, a couple of jokes, I think.
Where some men in biohazard suits and holding tongs came in and took them away.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those days. But we'll start with you. I'll talk Bayern in a second, but let's get the Arsenal sort of aspect out of the way. What did you make of the game?
I very much enjoyed the first half, didn't enjoy the second half because the game was rather spoiled by the dismissal of Szczesny. I thought Bayern Munich, by their own very high standards, were there for the taking, and Arsenal sort of their clown car collapsed a bit and they shot themselves in the foot. The second goal was very sloppy to give away, and they were unlucky as well. I mean, this rule about goalkeepers getting sent off for foul, you know, obviously the goalkeeper is going to be the last man. If he presents a clear goal scoring opportunity while legitimately trying to get the ball, it just seems harsh to reward the attacking team with another clear goal scoring opportunity and a red card for Arsenal.
Yeah, the latest line seems to be, Raphael, that a penalty is a clear goal scoring opportunity anyway. Which is quite a nice way of putting it, I think.
And it wasn't last night.
No, it wasn't. It's true. But sort of that's punishment enough. We'll talk about Bayern in a second, as I said. But what do you make of that whole debate? Should it be penalty yellow card, do you think, in that circumstance?
Well, the German FA have actually been pushing very hard with FIFA to rescind the triple punishment, as they call it, of penalty, red card and suspension, which is another thing to think about. So, I mean, in an ideal world, you'd say, OK, it's a pen, and if it's taken... If it's converted, then a yellow card will suffice because he's just been punished for taking away a goal-scoring opportunity, but it's been remedied by the guy having a penalty. Now, if he doesn't score, then there's a huge incentive to make these last-ditch tackles. That's why the rule was brought in the first place, to take that bit of uncertainty away and say, you know, if you bring down somebody down, then you're off. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those things that, of course, changed the game. It did kill the game to a certain extent, as Wenger said. But I think we should maybe talk about a couple of things. First of all, very few teams will be as good on the ball to the extent that it actually does kill a game when the opposition are in a one man down. We used to hear all the time, sometimes it can be an advantage for a team to have a playoff because they sit really deep and they're hard to break down. I think it takes a certain team and a certain kind of quality to make a team suffer to the extent that Bayern did and Barcelona did with Man City the night before. That's one point. The other point is, I think, these are the things that you cannot control as a manager. You know, Szczesny comes out a fraction earlier, he gets the ball, nothing happens. Maybe Arsenal go on to have a really good game, maybe score a goal, maybe even win this game. But what you can control are other things. And things like not finishing second in your group, needlessly. Things like not having Sonogo as your first striker in the most important, arguably most important game of the season. Making the wrong substitution when everybody, I think, thought Ozil should have been the man coming off. You don't want him with 10 men fighting against Bayern. Why not take him off and leave Cazorla on? But I think Wenger felt that he couldn't do that because it was Mesut Ozil. Just things like that, I think, that you need to get right. You need to get all these little details right to give yourself a clear chance, and Arsenal didn't. And despite being really, really impressive, probably at the most impressive I've seen them for a long time in the first 25 minutes or so, and really surprising Bayern with the way that they attacked, the way that they kept the press high, kept men forward, a really risky but courageous and excellent performance, other things come back to bite you in over the course of the 90 minutes. And I think that's where their big failing is in the bigger scheme of things. In the small things, I think they got a lot of things right last night.
I mean, you could argue as well, it was very brave to play Sonogo given the style of game he was trying to play, in the sense that Giroud has looked really
brave,
tired. He's looked really tired, Rafa, in recent weeks, and
yeah,
maybe
brave,
he wanted the energy of the younger guy.
I think brave shouldn't come into it when you make a decision as a manager. You have to make the right decision, not whether it's brave or not, it doesn't really matter. You need to put the best possible guy in there, and you wonder, is Sonogo really more qualified than Lucas Podolski, who's, I don't know, scored 20 goals in the Champions League off the top of my head, played 60 Champions League matches. I mean, it really seems a bit of a bizarre decision. And I mean, Sonogo got a very good review, probably slightly unwarranted, in my opinion, after the Liverpool game. But at times, he reminded me a little bit of a sort of a Bebe, a guy who perhaps shouldn't be on the pitch, just didn't have the requisite quality, in my view.
I noticed today Mesut Ozil seems to be getting an awful lot of criticism. Some of it deserved. His penalty was very poor and his head dropped clearly after that. But there's been accusations of laziness, which I think were a bit harsh. He's not a very good defender when called upon to track back or whatever. But according to the game statistics, Jack Wilshere is the only Arsenal player who ran further than him last night.
Yeah, it was interesting that Ozil, I don't know what you thought, Raphael, but throughout the game, you could see he was going to be the scapegoat, couldn't you? You could just sense it throughout the game. I know he missed the penalty, but given the kind of game it developed into, given his style, if you like, you could just sense that pundits everywhere were going to be gunning for Ozil. What do you make of him in general at the moment at Arsenal? There is a feeling that he started very well and hasn't, you know, provided much for them in recent weeks.
I think he looks physically tired.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is he is Arsenal exemplified in the sense that there's only really one dimension to his game. If he's on it, he is beautiful, he's technical, he makes things happen. If he's not, he's not going to start clattering into people, making last-ditch challenges, running through the midfield like Yaya Toure. That's not his game. And I think you could see that he's not quite there. And you know, it makes you wonder, if you see it from outside, why can't Wenger see it? I think it's not even his fault. I mean, he's not trying to play badly, or as Barry said, his stats in terms of distance are pretty well. I'm not sure at what pace he ran those 11 kilometers, but I think he needs a rest. And I think again, it comes down to the depth in the squad and to the way that Wenger is managing his players and managing lineups. And you just feel it's, at the moment, he's in a bit of a lull, and it's a shame that no one's around to help him out and maybe give him a rest.
Now, what do you make of, here's a question about the penalties. Raphael could talk us through the childhoods and young careers of Mesut Ozil and Manuel Neuer, which, of course, were very much intertwined. But given, on a basic level, Barry, I'm not suggesting that you can only answer the basic questions, but given on a basic level that, you know, he'd missed a penalty against Marseille, I think he'd missed his last two, hadn't he?
Yeah.
The top two penalty takers, neither of them were playing. Arteta would normally take the penalty. I think Giroud would be second, I think I'm right in saying. Should you look at someone else to take that penalty kick, do you think? Should someone else step forward? Should someone else be given that responsibility? Because an awful lot of people said they didn't fancy him when he was running up.
Well, if he is happy to take it and confident he'll score, then you kind of have to say, go on, yeah, take it. But his effort was feeble. You know, it was just really shocking. And it clearly had a huge effect, a detrimental effect on him, his performance for the rest of the game.
Well, yeah, Bayern certainly dominated. There were some poor performances in the Arsenal side, but Bayern were very, very good. Were you surprised how vulnerable they looked for the first, say, 25 minutes though, Rafa?
I was surprised because Guardiola changed his lineup almost in expectation of an onslaught, but then they still couldn't cope with it, which was really strange to see. And Ole Hoeneß, the president, said it was really down to Bayern almost being not used to that anymore because they're so far ahead in the Bundesliga and never get put under this much pressure. And maybe there is that. It's just like the switch. They couldn't quite make the switch quick enough. But at the same time, you have to say that Pep's whole tactical idea the first 45 minutes completely failed. He had Robin on the left with a role to go everywhere. Götze was out on the right, so already really in the wrong positions. So I don't know what the thinking was. Then he put in all these crosses against Mertesacker and Koscielny that were easily dealt with. And just like Özil on the other side later on when he was playing on the left, there was a lot of space ahead of David Alaba, who was exposed again and again. And Oxlade-Chamberlain had a really excellent game running at him, but there was very little protection for Alaba. So despite all the best preparations, they still got it pretty badly wrong. And only when they switched it back to the more usual style of this season with Lahm in the middle and Robin Beck on his right side and Götze on the left, or Thiago was playing on the left, then they had the balance, of course, being one man up also helped.
And the obvious follow-on from that comment is, have we now seen a blueprint as to how to take Bayern on in the Champions League? You still have to be good enough to do it, don't you? But have we seen the way to maybe trouble them and beat them?
I think yes and no. I think you saw how you can put trouble on them. You saw how you can put pressure on them. But even before the sending off, the pressure just dropped a little bit simply because Arsenal just couldn't keep it up. They had four or five players pressing really, really high the first 15, 20 minutes or so. They just couldn't maintain that. And over 90 minutes, you know, wonder even if they score a goal or two, will they pay the price afterwards? Now, they paid a spectacular price because they were even more knackered when Szczęsny was sent off. But you wonder how sustainable such an intense approach is in a game like this, where the possession qualities of the other side will come through eventually.
Yeah, Cruz was sensational as well, wasn't he? And he's got all the headlines. I've stupidly said many times, I think Thiago Alcantara one day will win Ballon d'Or. And Cruz rightly gets all the headlines, but Thiago's so good to watch, isn't he? Just effortlessly brilliant.
He was a little bit overshadowed by Kroos yesterday. I've seen him play a lot better this season. Kroos was very, very good, but he really came into his own when he had a lot of time on the ball. I think in the first half, he was a bit anonymous, and I think it's easy to kind of see the whole game through the prism of the second half, which is so ingrained in your mind because it's just one-way traffic by and just probing away and playing almost like a handball football just around the seven-meter semicircle, just going round and round and round until they found the opening. So, yeah, Kroos is brilliant. Interestingly enough, at the Bayern banquet last night, his situation is not as clear-cut as perhaps one or two people thought it might be in terms of extending his contract. There is a bit of a reluctance from Bayern to give him what he wants, not just for the financial reasons, but also because he's been seen as a little bit aloof, not really one of the big team members yet. And you wonder how this is going to pan out. I think it really is 50-50. I thought, you know, a couple of weeks ago, probably he'll extend his contract. Now I think it's a lot more unsure, and a performance like this, of course, will only have helped him to have offers. I think David Moyes was on the ground again, he would have been salivating.
Yeah, German footballer, aloof and arrogant. Headline news, eh? Goodness me. Manchester City. No, I didn't say German, just footballers, Rafa.
I didn't say arrogant.
Wasn't aimed at you. No, I added that. Manchester City Barca then, Barry. Similarly, a tale of a red card that really couldn't be debated, although you could have the same debate, couldn't you, about the penalty kick and so on, and was it punishment enough? But what did you make overall of City against Barca? Were City a bit unfortunate? Were they, like Arsenal, maybe going to cause a problem or two until the red card?
Yeah, I thought they played well for 45 minutes, maybe a bit more, and they were unlucky, and much like Ozil seems to be being made the scapegoat for Arsenal's defeat in some quarters. Di Michaelis is getting a lot of grief. The big finger of blame is being pointed his way, which I think is a bit harsh. He deserved to get sent off, but the penalty award was unjust. The ref made a 50-50 call and got it wrong. Wouldn't be particularly critical of him for that, because the players were travelling so fast when the foul took place. But up to that point, Di Michaelis had contributed as much as anyone to an excellent defensive performance.
See, I'm with you, and I'm glad you said that, because I thought he was excellent until that point, but someone in the studio is shaking their head. Someone who has seen more of Di Michaelis than either of us, I suspect, in his Bayern days.
Yeah, I thought he was fairly awful throughout the game.
Did you?
Yeah, I was at the ground, and you saw him make some good interventions, but you saw him also giving the ball away three or four times from really bad and dangerous situations. And he was just exuding a sense of insecurity, and you could feel it. You could feel the Barca players, whenever he got the ball, they were suddenly switched on. Di Michaelis has got the ball. Let's get it off him. And I thought, it's not his fault. He shouldn't be in that position in the first place. He's 33 years old. He's been found out at this level time and time again at Bayern. I couldn't believe when Pellegrini brought him in. I thought, you know, maybe it's his fourth. He was sold to the fans as only the fourth centre-back at the time. He's only just doing a job, helping us out, but we have some injuries. Now he's a regular, and City are paying the price for it. I think it's not his fault, he's not good enough, but it's somebody else's fault that he is playing for the richest team in the world. They can buy a lot of better centre-backs than him. And I find it incredible that he was even on the pitch.
Right, well, Ian McIntosh hasn't turned up, and I would like to rip him to shreds for it, but I think for good reason, so we'll leave it there. I've built him up as light relief, so Paul McInnes, you've got a bit of a task on your hands, but thanks for coming in as a last-minute sub.
No, it's no problem at all. I'm light, but more lightweight than light relief.
Okay,
still,
and
we can progress.
This, and I'm thanking you for coming in and helping us out, but I guess this gets you out of the office for half an hour, doesn't it?
Well, it does, actually. Yeah. There's loads of kind of smuggery around in our department at the minute, because half the people were at the Brits last night, so they're all like, hey, I was hanging out with Alex Turner, what were you doing? I was in the Slug and Lettuce in Islington watching Arsenal, you know, capitulate at the last.
Surely not going to the Brits is a reason to be smug.
Yeah, that's what Alex. That's what the real cool dude is, like Alexis Petridis. Like, he gets paid every year to write an article about the Brits, and every year it's the same. The Brits are corporate and nobody should pay any attention to them, and next year he comes back and has to write the same piece again.
Yeah.
One day they'll listen.
Yeah, exactly. Let's be ironic about the Brits. Quite a Guardian thing to do. We're on to Manchester City against Barcelona.
Yes.
We haven't talked about the Swedish ref yet, and the accusations aimed at him.
Northern Europeans.
Anything you'd like to say about that, do you think, to start off with?
Well, apart from the fact that we have an intense rivalry and hate all Northern Europeans ourselves and wouldn't trust them an inch and have sent them death mail in the past, I would have thought he's quite likely to be on our side.
This Northern European rivalry has been really exemplified by curling over the last sort of week or so as well, hasn't
it?
And will continue. And in fact, it's Switzerland for the women and Canada for the men. So
I denounced the Swedes in full view of all the office yesterday as we were beating them in the semi-final, and it turned out there was a new PA being trained on the other side of my desk who happened to be Swedish.
Right. Well, there's probably a good and a bad side to that story. But what did you make of Pellegrini's reaction? You've sort of criticised Wenger for his and said he got, you know, lots of details in the game wrong and should concentrate on those. Do you think the same about Pellegrini? It was pretty churlish, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I don't think he got many things wrong, incidentally, apart from buying Di Michaelis, but enough of that. I mean, the reaction felt genuine in the sense that he seemed to be really unhappy about what had happened, and he felt that that changed the game and decided the tie for him. But first of all, there wasn't really any sound reason for complaint. The whole Sweden thing was completely over the top, and, you know, coming from a Chilean, not necessarily a hotbed of world football, it just sounded a bit odd. And I don't know how heartfelt it was. I think you'd like to think that it was just a smokescreen for not getting criticised, especially in the Spanish press, because I think he felt a bit of the pressure. I think the real point about this is that City played in a way that can't really play, and it did reasonably well, because they're not a team built to play without the football. They are built to dominate, to run through the midfield with Yaya Toure, to put pressure on the wings, and when they spend extended time without the ball, they really struggle, usually, as they did against Bayern. And here, they adapted a lot better to that situation. And Wydad still had 11 men. They pressed sometimes and they set back again. I think they really showed that they can change it a little bit, but perhaps not quite enough to be ready enough to take on a Barcelona who weren't at the very best, but still are good enough to beat a team like City.
It did seem to put a limitation on City's attacking game to play like that. I mean, they were playing a little bit longer, a little bit more direct, trying to use the physicality that they had, that advantage. But they didn't really retain possession well, particularly not with 11 men, I didn't think.
But Barry, do you think there's a thing here about, a few people have said it, that you should play to your own strengths and not spend the whole time worrying about the opposition's strengths and play two left-backs to deal with their right-back, their marauding right-back who ends up scoring, admittedly. But is there something in that, do you think? Should City have approached it their way?
Yeah, I think City might have been slightly bemused by Barcelona's rather, I thought, cautious approach. And it's kind of like, well, we weren't expecting this and aren't quite sure how to deal with it. And then didn't really get the opportunity to deal with it because Di Michaelis got sent off. So City seem to have lost in very similar circumstances to Arsenal, but have got a far easier ride, which I find weird because, I mean, they're both very wealthy clubs, but the amount of money City have spent and they're continuing to fail in Europe. I mean, they may turn this around, but it's highly unlikely.
The interesting thing, I think, about Barcelona was that there is, they were quite defensive afterwards about the performance, and Fabregas came out slightly petulantly.
His appearance at the Brits, by the way. Yes.
Yeah, and said, you know, this will shut up a few people. This was a clear reference to Mourinho. But he also talked about the pressure from the fans. And I think the situation is almost like one of those bands, you know, who 3 or 4 years after their greatest hits go back on tour, slightly different personnel, slightly different repertoire, and the fans and the public are saying, yeah, you used to be a lot better. You're okay now, but you used to be a lot better. And they really seem to be very unnerved by not just having to take on the opposition, but also their own self as the sort of invisible opponents from the past. They're playing against what they've done before. And this side are not as good, but they might still be good enough to beat most of the teams left in this competition.
Yeah, there's a great, on the wonderful and underrated and not watched anymore comedy sketch show Big Train, there's a great sketch about Ralph McTell, who did Streets of London, and he's playing a gig, and every time he tries to play any of his new material, he gets booed off the stage, and then when he plays Streets of London, everyone cheers and applauds, and maybe Barcelona are the Ralph McTell of European football. They won't have been called that before, that is for sure. But yeah, just to sort of round up the, we'll talk about the other two games in a second, but are City and Arsenal both done now for you, Barry, do you think?
I could conceivably see Arsenal possibly doing a number on Munich. It's very unlikely, but I think that the City goose is cooked.
Same for you, Raphael?
Yeah, I think I'd still give Arsenal a small chance, but they kind of blew it. And City, no chance for me.
No chance at all. What about you, Paul?
And I think both are out. I'd actually see perhaps Man City having more of a chance, just because I think if they play a little bit more dirty, a little bit more aggressive and find more balls into the box, they've got more chances.
You know what's going to happen, don't you, by the way? This whole story, Manchester United are going to end up in the Champions League semi-finals at this rate, and everyone else is going to be out. Something weird like that is going to happen.
Are you saying
this
should be a bit more like Stoke?
I mean, I think that's right. I mean, you've got to take that wet Wednesday night and export it to Catalonia.
Okay, we'll see if that happens. It's unlikely, but we'll see if that
happens.
Listen,
funny things are happening in the global weather system right now.
Right,
it could happen.
Okay, so a rainy night in Barcelona.
That's what you've got to pray for.
Could prove to be Pellegrini's night. We're going to talk in part two about the other Champions League games. I'm really looking forward to the Zlatan chat. It's a shame that Fernando's not here. But that's it for part one. We'll see you in a moment. Well, we've pretty much said that, well, some of us think City and Arsenal are both out. One give City a chance, some give Arsenal a chance. But I don't think you can give Bayer Leverkusen any chance at all. And, well, Barry, I should start with you after Fernando's disgraceful comments about Zlatan Ibrahimovic not doing it in the big games. He must have got lucky, mustn't he, Ibrahimovic?
Once again, he got lucky. I mean, I presume Fernando would probably argue that Bayer Leverkusen...
It doesn't constitute a big game. I knew you were going to say that, yeah.
But... that tie is very much game over, and he scored two remarkable goals.
And good to see a Swede having a positive influence as well on the week of Champions League action. But in fairness, PSG caught Bayer at the perfect time, didn't they? They've been in awful form recently.
Yeah, but there's something weird which probably needs some psychological examination about Bayern's big performances in Europe. I mean, they've had a 7-1 defeat by Barcelona, 5-0 against Man United twice, I think the scoreline was. And here's another collapse. And, you know, they aren't that bad a side. I mean, worse sides don't get beaten by that margin in Europe. And there is something very, very odd the way they just turn up and then roll over, not believing in themselves and just give up and collapse completely. I mean, you know, I'd like to say before the second leg, don't write off the Germans, but it's going to be embarrassment, and it's going to be really embarrassing for the state broadcaster who's picked that game. And, you know, nobody will tune in. I mean, few people would have tuned in the first place because Leverkusen have absolutely no fans outside Leverkusen, but I doubt that anyone will watch now.
No, it's going to be one of those awful go-through-the-motions games. I mean, PSG would be happily lose 1-0 probably, wouldn't they?
They went through. Yeah, they went through the motions in the second half even. They tried to not to embarrass Leverkusen too much. And it reflects really badly on them, but also on the Bundesliga, of course, because, you know, they're the second-best team in the league right now, and they don't play like that at all when it comes to European football.
Yeah, a really simplistic reading of it, Paul, is it shows the gulf a bit, doesn't it? We hear a lot about the gulf, but for those who don't watch the Bundesliga every week, which you should because it's very, very good, but for those who don't, it doesn't half show you how good Bayern are compared to the rest, with the possible exception of Dortmund.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's difficult for clubs when you are playing in a division where 75% of the time you can get into a different mindset and still win the game, that you don't have to be at your full intensity. It's the, you know, the same for a lot smaller leagues, like when teams like Celtic come in. So to make that adjustment, to be fully focused, to be switched on against a team and a squad as strong as the big Petro teams at the top of all leagues nowadays is difficult. So I don't think it's that surprising.
But what about PSG now? It's been muttered for some time that a genuine contender to win the whole thing. What about that, Barry?
Yeah, I think so. And with the amount of money they've spent, they should be. Personally, I don't see enough of them to know if they're genuine contenders or to have formed an opinion. But you would imagine with the players they have, yeah, why not?
And the way that Ibrahimovic is playing, any team with him in that kind of form has got to have a chance. In tribute to Ian McIntosh, by the way, we should describe one of his goals at least as a thunder bastard, because that's the way he would have he would have described it. But he's just in greatness.
He's great, and he also loves the fact that this team is completely built around him. I don't think he's ever been at a side where everybody is just playing for him. And, you know, speaking to one or two people close to the club, they said sometimes cause a bit of friction because he's really telling everybody the ball has to go to me. And then other people think, you know, you
sound like him at all.
This isn't really football, but he's so good that, you know, it's not a bad system to play. But strangely enough, they are the opposite of some of the teams you just described, Paul, because they have a tendency to take it really easy in the league and look a little bit soft at times. They don't finish teams off, but they seem to turn it on in the big games, where I think this team kind of wants it a bit more, wants to show that, you know, they are one of the coming powers in Europe. So they're not convincing domestically, but they really look like a tough, tough outfit.
And they can cruise domestically, can't they? That's the thing, because Monaco, they know, are always going to drop points where they shouldn't, and really everyone else, it would need a miracle for another Montpellier to happen. It was a miracle when it did, so they sort of know they're okay and they can turn it on a bit in the league. The other thing we should say about them before we move on to the other game is that for all Zlatan's brilliance, they're like a vice at the back. That Thiago Silva is still brilliant, and they are very, very strong,
and Marquinhos too. They've got a really strong at the centre half. I think you won't really know about them though until they do play off against a Bayern or a Madrid or a Barcelona. I mean, that's the real benchmark.
Yeah,
you'll really see people's resolve and resilience and ability to push through for a whole 90 minutes.
The longer it goes on, the more you can see them in the final. Well, we'll see, but it's going to be fun finding out. And what about Milan? Milan, actually, we slaughtered them on Monday. Myself and Horncastle, who allegedly know about these things, but they were fantastic for a while against Atletico, who Atletico were the ones who were looking a bit leggy, and Milan were mighty unlucky.
I'd say Atletico can't believe their luck that they got away from San Siro with a win, because they deserved to lose on the strength of the highlights I saw. I should stress I didn't see the whole game because I watched Arsenal Bayern Munich, but
didn't Sky Plus the second one? I watch it afterwards now.
No.
No? Okay, good.
I probably should have.
You having a life.
Yeah. Well, not really. I think, like, even James Richardson, who would stick up for Milan at any opportunity, he was expecting them to get tonked as well. And, fair play to them. And they'll think they have a chance in the second leg.
Yeah, they will. I don't know who this James Richardson character is, but I'm sure he's obviously a friend of yours, some chancer, yeah, absolutely. Do you think Atletico, should we be worried from an Atletico point of view after a performance like that? Because we felt they should have gone the way they've been playing and dominated. Is this a worry with a Real game coming up, with that league run-in coming up? Are they going to, do you think, sort of founder when they need to be strong?
I don't really have seen enough in a negative sense from him to suggest that there is any real danger of that happening. I mean, when you can get a 1-0 away win at Milan when you're not playing that well, that's usually seen as a pretty decent sign. And I think they'll know they can play a lot better. You're right. I mean, the fact that they've done so well in the league almost creates a new kind of pressure for them. And the team or the club have been famous for floundering under big pressure in the past. But I'm not sure that's necessarily an accusation you can make right now at this stage. You have to see how this pans out, and I still think that they are one of the worst teams you want to play against in the quarters if they do go through, which I expect them to do, simply because they kind of make things awkward. And in European football, that's usually a very good quality to have, a bit like Chelsea, I think, are also going to be very, very dangerous.
Yeah, and they've got the guy who can turn up with the goals when they need them still. I mean, it's an extraordinary story, Diego Costa, it really is. But how he is flowering, and he produces big goal after big goal.
He does, and he produces all different types of goals as well, and, you know, poachers' efforts as well as kind of individual efforts. And he, like his side, is somebody who is, you know, the expectations about him have risen and risen as the course of the season has gone on, and he's still delivering.
Yeah, terrific stuff from him.
Sorry, Michael Cox made an interesting point yesterday that QPR have brought Ravel Morrison in as an emergency loan signing, while one of QPR's players was playing in the Champions League last night for AC Milan.
But Adel Taarabt, is there not an argument that he's much more suited to playing sort of Italian football at that kind of pace? I mean, the player I think of straight away is Boateng, who was never regarded as a great player at Portsmouth, and yet it would be in Milan, you know. They were sorry to lose him in the end. Different sort of players, but sometimes you're just suited to another league.
I think
league,
you're being a bit unfair to him. I think his last year at Portsmouth with the FA Cup, when they went to the final, I think he played really well, and then he had that good World Cup afterwards. I think you saw that actually he's not a bad player. I mean, the Hertha chairman at the time famously talked about the fact that Spurs had bought him for so much money and laughed about it and said, "Thank you, Spurs. Ha 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 ha," and everyone sort of standing up and clapping. But I think he's a decent player. But you're right, I mean, Taarabt in the Premier League, that's probably not his best league to be in.
Yeah, the great story about Boateng, I'm sure it's widely known that Richard Hughes, who works with us all on BT, said that when he played at Portsmouth, he changed his name to Prince overnight. And he walked into training one day and they're all calling him Kevin. He refused to respond to it. And it would only respond when someone called him Prince.
And the next day,
Richard said he's sitting in the canteen going, "Kev, Kev, Kev," no, doesn't turn around. Prince turns around, but just fantastic. But takes a peculiar kind of arrogance to carry that off.
A week later, of course, he changed his name to a symbol and wouldn't even respond to Prince.
Is Adel Taarabt the artist formerly known as Kevin Prince Boateng? We'll never find out. But you take my point, Barry, about Taarabt in terms of he has technical ability that maybe you don't always see to best effect in the Championship, but you might see in Serie A and in a certain kind of Champions League game.
Yeah, I think he also needs a manager who shows faith in him, which he hasn't always had. I think Neil Warnock's the only one who didn't lose patience with him, and he did eventually in the end, but
he's just not that good. I mean, I think we can go around the houses without that track. He's just not that good. I mean, he just doesn't play. He's technically quite good, but he's not fast enough. He's not strong enough. He's not imaginative. He doesn't finish well enough. You know, he's better suited in Serie A because it is slower. He has more space. And
you slagging off Serie A?
I'm not. Yes.
And you're nodding as well, Honigstein.
No, I'm just saying he is. Like,
He's leaving me alone to flounder. Listen, I enjoy Serie A, and I think I enjoy watching it. It's some great commentary, particularly around that division. But, you know, I don't think you can look at that league and compare it effectively to the Spanish or the English league particularly.
Brilliant. You dug yourself out of that. Fantastically. Congratulations. That's it for part two. And, of course, coming next will be part three. Right, well, we'll be looking ahead to the weekend's Premier League action in just a moment. But first, I did say that it was your chance to speak your brains and have some feedback, and you have in your droves. Fernando got a lot of feedback, Barry. Did you read any of it? He was
no.
He's a splitter of opinion, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
But we got Lucas said, for a moment, I felt like I was playing Grand Theft Auto and listening to the talk station, the Fernando Duarte effect, which I quite liked. I really like this from Adam Flanagan as well. I'd like your input on this. He said, Gary Monk and Tim Sherwood both wear gilets. Are they forced to do this as they don't have the proper qualifications? Now, even if they're not, I think that should be brought in, Paul. What do you think?
So you only qualify to a full Wenger after Wenger you've got all
you've
your UEFA badges.
A length of time, yeah.
I kind of look at these new breed of coaches and I just think you're very skinny as well. You're very, like, Tim Sherwood, he looks quite gaunt. It's almost like he needs the gilet to keep the warmth in.
Yeah, but I like the gilet, sort of L-plates. The gilet is a Premier League manager, L-plates. Thanks to Nick the Mighty Red for mentioning 15-1. His mum went on 15-1. She won a heat. And her last question was, the 1966 World Cup final, they think it's all over. What did the commentator say next? And she said, but it isn't yet. Because she doesn't know anything about football, which was charming indeed. And we got a very long one about Felix Magath. We apparently didn't, I think we mentioned the name Kvelix, but we didn't say why he's called Kvelix. That's to do with Kvelin is to torture, is that right? And of course, Felix as well. We'll hear more from you. You presumably have interviewed Felix Magath a few times, so you've got a few stories to tell us. Rafi's nodding away, so we'll hear from that. That was part of Butchie Katapulinka's email, which is almost as long as his name, on the subject of Felix Magath. Anyway, we move on now to the Premier League this weekend. It starts with Chelsea against Everton. It's not the most lip-smackingly brilliant Premier League programme this weekend, I must say, Barry.
I'm just looking down the fixtures here. There's a few decent, interesting games, I think. I'm sure Paul is looking forward to Norwich Spurs. Will you be going?
I know. It's a 4 o'clock, though, isn't it? I used to play football on Sunday afternoon, so I'll go and watch it in the pub, get drunk, feel very sad, and come into work on Monday with a hangover. The worst way to start the week.
Okay, good for you.
Barry, a trip to Arsenal, what do you make of that?
I don't think Sunderland will come away with any points, but if... They'll have no doubt studied Bayern Munich's tactics last night and will attempt to emulate them.
Try and get the keeper sent off and then just dominate possession for the second half. West Brom Fulham is going to be interesting, isn't it? Because of you-know-who, because of Felix Magath in the Premier League. Anyone who knows anything about him smiled a lot, was quite surprised, I think, when he got the job, but then smiled a lot at the thought of him over here. You're the same, are you? I mean, he's a heck of a character, to say the least.
I really thought that the Fulham side might have been hacked when the news was put out that Magath was appointed. I mean, it sounded like a joke because the guy 2 years ago, you know, was fired from the Wolfsburg job and nobody would go near him, with the exception of Hamburg, who have this kind of messiah complex when it comes to Magath and felt that he might be the one who can save the club because the club is in such dire straits. It's an interesting appointment. I kind of see the logic in it because he's done very well in similar situations where he'd come in late on, very limited time, gets the players very fit, puts a lot of pressure on them psychologically. His man management has a lot of impact very quickly, and he's managed to save some of these clubs, or most of them, in fact. And you look at the table, and there's still a lot of teams that you wouldn't necessarily think, you know, they're much, much better than Fulham. And I still I can understand why they went for the sort of the last throw of the dice with him. The problem is that his methods are just totally unsustainable over any lengthier period of time, because he's become almost a bit of a caricature, the way he handles teams, the kind of demands that he has on them in physical terms. And when I interviewed him, he was he just reinvented himself after all these firefighting jobs before. He just reinvented himself as somebody who can actually build a club with Stuttgart. That was the young, exciting Stuttgart team.
That was the Karanyi team. That
Karanyi
team,
with Philipp Lahm was there as a left back, and they beat Manchester United in the Champions League. And on the back of that, he got the Bayern Munich job, where in the first 2 years he won two doubles. But in the third year, they got rid of him very quickly because the relationship between him and the team, and also him and everybody else in the club, including the reception woman who he refused to greet anymore, had broken down completely. And since then, something in him has kind of switched a little bit, become very, very cynical. He can still be incredibly charming towards the press and a great guy to talk to, but doesn't really talk to the players, very, very cold to them. You know, one day you're in the starting lineup, the next day you're jogging with the youth team somewhere in the woods. I mean, it's that kind of regime, very unforgiving, very punishing, and it seems a little bit sort of out of date.
And he's not messed around because a lot of people felt, you know, well, a lot of people felt Kerbyshyn would get the job, and that was one of the reasons you were shocked that Maggott got it, I think. But Kerbyshyn and Wilkins gone.
Yeah, I mean, they did appear to be an odd structure that they had with, you know, two experienced managers. You know, Ray Wilkins had done his Spurs as well, sitting underneath a coach who hadn't. And now this seems a similarly weird appointment, or structure at least. You wonder about how he's going to communicate to the squad. But at the same time, you wonder really whether, with all the goals that they've shipped, that maybe it is kind of a kick up the arse that they need rather than any kind of development tactically on the pitch.
Well, I'm just slightly puzzled by what a manager who is sort of focuses so much on intense fitness and, you know, medicine bowls and long cross-country runs, what he can really bring to the table this late in the season when the players are presumably already fit, and running them into the ground isn't going to help.
Are we just finally on Maggott, because we'll talk about the other fixtures, are we, you mentioned the word caricature, he's not bad tactically either, is he? It's not just about, you know, cross-country runs and medicine balls, is it? Or is it? I mean, you know far more than we do.
It's open to debate, because at Stuttgart, as I said, he reinvented himself, and I think some of my colleagues refer to him as a sort of a super brain of the Bundesliga. But then at Bayern, a lot of players complained that there was very, very little tactical input, and that when Maggott, there was a famous incident when Maggott said, was shouting at somebody and said, "You're not really doing your tactical, you're not sticking to the tactical plan." And they came back and said, "What's the tactical plan?" And they just looked at each other in silence. So,
and then Maggott floored him with a right hook and he never walked again, yeah.
Maggott also said to me, off the record, and perhaps a bit unfair to say this, but I think he'll probably forgive me, at the time in Stuttgart, which is 10 years ago, that the Premier League wasn't really that interesting to him because tactically it was very, very simplistic.
You mentioned Kevin Karanyi there. Whatever happened to him? Is he still knocking around?
He's in Russia now.
Because there were kind of high hopes for him, which he never really fulfilled.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think he lost his position in the Germany team after that walkout at half-time during a friendly, and never really kind of recovered from that.
He always had that reputation, didn't he, the little bit loco, Karanyi? He had a few issues off the field, didn't he? He was a bit an interesting character, shall we say?
I remember watching a feature on him on some football show once, and he was only 17 or 18 at the time, but it was, you know, at home hanging with Kevin Karanyi kind of thing. And I just remember he seemed to have this incredibly dull life, him hanging with his friends, all of whom seemed to be pretty boring people.
You're listening to Life Stories here on Football Weekly. This week, Kevin Karanyi. Next week, Andreas Hinkel takes centre stage. But we've only got time now to move on to Liverpool against Swansea. The Laudrup press conference, we've got to be careful what we say because there's an awful lot of legal stuff going on. But in itself, Paul, it was quite odd to see someone. I thought there was something quite charming about it, actually, that he wanted to make his point, to call a press conference at Heathrow to make his points about his dismissal. That in itself was sort of odd.
That's charming, I think. It's the sort of thing they do with immigrants from Romania, but they kind of set it up outside the international arrivals. You know, he obviously enjoyed interacting with the UK media in a way that some coaches didn't, and maybe wants to be remembered fondly, perhaps for future employment.
Are you suggesting he should have sort of sat in Pret-a-Manger with Nigel Farage and talked about the issues of the day, and that would have been good?
I think that certainly would have endeared him to a substantial section of the British populace, but Gary Monk appears to have been able to channel into something, which this union and bringing the squad together, which suggests that things weren't that great at Swansea at the end.
You know, some of the suggestions were that he was never really at training, he was always in Paris and something, so maybe picking Heathrow was just a good way to just get this over with and then go to the next.
A man is at home at an airport, as everyone would say. But Rodgers against Swansea, you would expect to end in Rodgers' favour. These are the kind of games that if Liverpool can build momentum, Barry, they can become the dark horses to win the title, as everyone's saying.
Well, they already are the dark horses to win the title, I suppose.
Chihuahua.
I suppose a lot will depend on how Swansea fare against Napoli, which that game has been played, well, may well have already been played by the time you're listening to this. But, Swansea aren't great, are they? And I would fancy Liverpool to win that game.
I think Liverpool did really well, despite being beaten by Barcelona. I thought on another day they could have easily won that game. Created enough chances, just didn't take those chances, but the performance was good enough to suggest that their run might continue.
And another thing that'll be interesting, having said this weekend's not interesting, we've already found a few things to talk about, but Newcastle Villa, with the shadow of Vince McMahon hanging over the whole thing, Paul, but also, if they lose, I know the story's been discounted and the Express have been banned and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, Pardew under pressure, maybe. The story was he was one game away from the sack.
Yeah, he's always under pressure, the poor fella. I mean, he's done exceptional stuff at Newcastle, particularly given the chaos and the absence of resources. Their first 11 on the day can compete with most sides in the division. And, yeah, their form has been in and out, but they're still, alongside Southampton, one of only two teams who aren't being pulled, you know, either upwards or downwards, and in the modern game, that's probably about as good as a team like Newcastle can expect. So, you know, meanwhile, similar pressure will probably be on Paul Lambert if he loses too.
And dare I say, finally, a very peculiarly important game for Manchester United away at Palace, because just get the feeling, if Moyes could prove they can go and win at clubs like that against a Pulis approach, then he might start to turn a few people round. It sounds like an odd thing to say, but you know what I mean, Barry, about that? That everyone's expecting, I think, them to trip up there at Palace. But if they could go and win there and then beat Olympiacos, then who knows? They might be on a roll. Rafi doesn't believe this at all.
I don't think anybody believes it.
It's not much of a roll, is it? Beating Crystal Palace and then Olympiacos. I mean, every game for Manchester United is big at the moment because their season is a car crash and people are enjoying the experience of rubbernecking this car crash, you know? I wouldn't be at all surprised if Crystal Palace got a result against them or even beat them. Pulis has been around the block long enough, you know, often enough to... He'll have a plan, and you would not bet the farm on Manchester United to win any game at the moment with any confidence. You know, there are much better bets to have in football. And, you know, as perfect punter. You know.
Absolutely. Still available, as I said, in one or two bookshops now. Your final thoughts on the weekend?
Well, I do think 12 games to go, it is bubbling up really nicely. I think as much as you might have expected Arsenal to have fallen away, and they have, for there to still be four, even five teams competing for the title at this stage, I think is more than most Premiership fans have experienced over the past, you know, 20 years. So I think it's pretty exciting, and gritty weekends like this will be the ones that make it.
Yeah, no, I like that. You see, you've now sold the weekend to me.
Thank you,
yeah, very good. And will it have the ultimate romantic ending, do you think? Will Liverpool win the title?
Oh, I thought you said Norwich get a point against Spurs. this thing, I'm starting to believe that they are comedy at times at the back, but just going forward they are unbelievable to watch.
Yeah, football has a habit though of letting you believe things like that, then letting you down very, very badly. Talking of being let down, I know you have been this week, so thanks for being, to quote John Merrick, so terribly, terribly kind to me. But James will be back on Monday and next week. And by the way, if you want the sort of European reaction to the Champions League, Raphael will be wherever he is on the website, reviewing the newspapers in James's instead doing that job as well. But thanks very much indeed for listening. I'll probably see you next year, next time that James has a skiing holiday. Thanks so much to Ian McIntosh for absolutely nothing. Thanks to Paul McInnes and Raphael Honigstein and Barry Glendenning. And from me, Dave Farrar, from Football Weekly Extra. Bye-bye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.